The Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you get confused by the Trinity. If God the Father and God the Son and God the Holy Spirit are all co-equally God, then why is Jesus called the Son of God? Doesn't the very word Son suggest that he was born, which would also suggest there was a time when he did not exist? Well, my friend, if this has been on your mind, then you have something in common with Chris, who sent me a question right along these lines. He says, "Hi, just checking a theology question, if you don't mind. So God was not made. That means God did not create Jesus and the Holy Spirit, right? They were also always in existence. And when Jesus refers to himself as the Son and God as the Father, that is just an imperfect analogy, but he doesn't intend for us to carry it so literally that we think God created a son. Thanks, Chris." Okay, no, that's a very good question, Chris. Jesus always existed as God and as the second person of the Trinity, but not in the form of a man. Whatever he looked like before, whatever power he had before, whatever appearance he had before, he gave it all up when he emptied himself of the form of God to come to earth. We call this the incarnation. And this is explained with some detail in Philippians chapter 2, after his incarnation and birth through his mother, the Virgin Mary, he became the Son of God. In eternity past, he was not known as God the Son, but rather God the Word. In the first chapter of John, we read, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." Now, that was written in a language called Greek. And the Greek word logos, it was more than what we mean when we just talk about a spoken word. It meant an expression. And so they're talking here about the eternal nature of Christ in the past. But later in that same chapter, the first chapter of John, it says, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." Welcome to our program, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. A lot of news to catch up on today because I was not with you the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we aired a repeat. I was resting my voice after my one-man performance of my play, The Dust of Eden. Thanks to all of you who came out for this performance and for the wonderful response. And then last week, my lovely wife Dana substitute hosted with her annual program about healing and forgiveness for any who have had abortions. Her retreat, From Grief to Gladness, is coming up on the weekend of April 26th through 28th. For more detail, go to my website, bobsiegel.net. That's Bob Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. Abortion has actually been in the news a lot lately. Before getting into it, an important clarification, especially in the context of last week's program. My feelings about politicians who justify this practice and my feelings about women who seek forgiveness are very different. I'm convinced most women, especially teens, but frankly, it could be women of all ages, when they have abortions, I believe they are being exploited and made to believe the lie that this is nothing but birth control. And so if you're listening and you have had an abortion and if you are feeling bad, my purpose right now is not to condemn you. God loves you. God wants to forgive you. You see, as Christians, we serve a dual purpose. We defend and speak out for standards, but far more importantly, we teach forgiveness for any who have violated a standard. However, even as I speak forgiveness for those who have had abortions, the other side of the coin today is that I feel contempt for politicians who not only support abortion, but actual infanticide. Now, one such proposed infanticide law I actually discussed a few weeks ago. I'm going to revisit it because there's a little bit of an update. Under the term abortion, this bill failed to pass in Virginia, but oh, the defender of the bill, Democratic Governor Ralph Northam, he said the law would have allowed abortion all the way up to dilation. In his own words, Northam says such actions are done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's not viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. Supposedly, that's supposed to really relax us. The infant will be kept comfortable. Well, isn't that nice? Listen to what's happening while they're keeping the infant comfortable. The infant will be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. This is harrowing, but that's not all that's coming out of the beautiful state of Virginia. I'm reading from Fox News. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam signed into law on Monday a bill that will make animal cruelty a penalty in the Commonwealth. Dubbed Tommy's Bill, the legislation is set to change current law, which according to WWBT states that those who abuse animals can only be charged with a misdemeanor unless the animal dies. But after the Democratic governor signed the bill into law, animal cruelty will be considered a Class 6 felony, which is punishable by a fine of up to $2,500 and up to 5 years in prison. The bill was named after Tommy, a male put bill. Now, this article goes on, but it gets very graphic and very disgusting, so I'm not even going to finish reading it. Okay, look, animal cruelty is horrible. I don't mind it being outlawed. Any decent person with a conscience would feel the same way. I love dogs and cats. My wife and I own both a dog and a cat. But what kind of society protects animal rights yet not the rights of a human baby? What kind of society allows a born infant to be put to death simply because it's the result of a botched abortion late term? Now, the U.S. Senate tried to pass a law that would stop the killing of a born infant, even if late term abortion had been intended. It was voted down, and voted down by every single current Democratic senator running for president in 2020. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to know about the people who want to become your president. Now, another Democratic candidate, though not a senator, Beto O'Rourke, takes the exact same stand. Well, Beto also says, though, that he's against the death penalty for charged criminals. And so does our California Governor Gavin Newsom. Both have expressed their disdain for killing. Newsom actually overturned with an executive order a capital punishment law passed by the citizens of California that would put to death anybody guilty of murder. In fact, this same Governor Newsom said he was inspired by his daughter asking him how anyone could deliberately kill another human being. Oh, isn't that special? Brings a tear to my eye, especially when we consider that both of these men of the people support late-term abortion infanticide. Good question to talk about with your daughter, Governor. Yes, indeed. How could we, as a society, deliberately kill a human being? Astounding. We will protect the lives of people convicted of murder. We will protect the lives of animals. But the lives of innocent babies? Not so much. Babies don't concern them. Somebody uses a straw? Somebody wants to use a paper shopping bag? That concerns them. Welcome to the Democratic platform of 2020. Let's go down the list. And one of them we just did. Give animals and criminals more rights than babies, okay? But the list continues. Lower the voting age to 16. Get rid of the Electoral College. stack the Supreme Court so that if a president's in power and the court's tipped one way, he can just put in other justices and tip it his way. Abolish our borders, or at least block all legislation that tries to enforce our borders. Allow illegals the right to vote by making it against the law for polls to ask for voter ID. Respond to anti-Semitism from a Muslim congresswoman by condemning Islamophobia. Impeach Trump and compare him to Hitler, hoping no one will notice their own Hitler-esque qualities mentioned in the 2 points I just talked about, infanticide and anti-Semitism. Get rid of all private health care insurance. Outlaw cars and planes. Refit every single building in the country to comply with green standards. Make everything green except money, because no money will be left. Well, you've got it, Democrats, whatever you say. Anything else? Speaking of all that climate change, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the brilliant sage of our age, is comparing climate change to 9/11. She's also comparing those who fail to comply with her Green Deal to those who would not fight for civil rights. No real surprises here. It was only a matter of time. Well, that's okay. We all make our comparisons. For myself, I compare her to Alice in Wonderland. Although maybe I owe Lewis Carroll an apology. There's even more from Alexandria. If we don't do something about climate change, aka her brilliant Green Deal, our grandchildren will someday look back and blame us. They will not be laughing, she says. Gee, that's strange. I thought nobody would be around in 12 years at all if we ignored her blueprint for saving the planet, grandchildren or otherwise. Perhaps Ms. Cortez could benefit from a talk with another climate expert, Chicken Little. He might be able to teach her the difference between an acorn hitting her on the head and a conclusion that the sky is falling. But we would be remiss if we gave all the credit to Ms. Cortez. After all, Elizabeth Warren likes to hear her own voice, too. Unfortunately, while she may hear herself, she doesn't seem to be actually listening to herself. Elizabeth Warren, I'm in favor of the Green Deal. I want everyone on Medicare. I am not a socialist. Yeah, and I am not a radio talk show host. We'll be right back.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. I went through a list, certainly not an exhaustive list, but I went through a list of what's essentially going to be the Democrat platform as they all try to outdo each other before the primaries of 2020. And now I'm going through some of them, taking a closer look. There was also another little tasty nugget on this platform: getting rid of the Electoral College. Now, that always sounds good. I'll admit, when I was a little kid, I didn't understand the Electoral College, but something happened to me. I grew up. It always sounds good. Oh, let's return to the popular vote. You know, the Democrats weren't talking that way back in 2016 when some suggested that Trump might win the popular vote but lose the Electoral College. Had Hillary won the Electoral and Trump won the popular, oh, we would have heard about what a time-honored tradition the Electoral College is. Well, it's not a tradition. It's part of the Constitution. Our forefathers didn't want us run by a mob. That's why, contrary to popular opinion, we are not a democracy. We are a representative republic. We are 50 sovereign states loosely allied for mutual benefit. At least that was the intention. The idea was that each state chooses for itself who they want for president. Those who win a combination of the most states and or the biggest states win the election. If not, what candidate would ever campaign in the Midwest again? Our elections would be decided by New York City, Los Angeles, and a few other densely populated places. Let me explain this with an analogy. I mean, why stop with the Electoral College? Let's change the World Series, too. Here's a future hypothetical contest, the World Series. Game one, Team A wins 2-1. Game two, Team B wins 3-0. Game three, Team B wins 1-0. Game four, Team A wins 8-0. Game five, B wins 3-1. Game six, Team A wins 1-0. Game seven, Team B wins 3-2. Now, according to those old, outdated rules, Team B wins the World Series. Why? Because it won 4 out of the 7 games. In other words, of the allotted contests, it won the majority. But should the Democrats take over the World Series, the champion is Team A. When the total score of the 11 games are added, Team A gets 14 runs. Team B has only 11 runs. This World Series moment has been brought to you by the DNC and other sore losers. Continuing down the list of our Democratic 2020 platform, let's add up our immigration system and its brilliant laws. Anyone who gets into the country, regardless of whether or not they came through a point of entry, even if they broke in illegally, has but to say the magic word asylum, and they cannot be sent home. Instead, they have to be processed. It's like when you played hide-and-seek as a kid. All you had to do was get to the base and shout, "Olly, olly, oxen free." Now, the illegal person gets to remain in our country until a court date. Since illegal immigrant parents cannot be jailed, if that means being separated from their children, something American families of American criminals endure all the time, incidentally. And since the law now says that children cannot be held for an extended length of time, even with their parents, anyone coming over the border with a child becomes part of catch and release. They do not have to prove that they are the parents at this first juncture either. We must take them at their word temporarily. This means a drug cartel member can be coming in with a child, and his child is to him nothing but a ticket. Since our holding facilities are inadequate, many who make sanctuary claims will be released even if they come without children. All such cases are given a court date and told to return so that their claim of needing asylum can be heard. Even though generally the claims are found invalid, we have to go through the process anyway. Since we do not have enough judges, this court date will not come around anytime soon. Very few ever return for their court date and instead lose themselves in our society. We do not have the manpower to search for all of them. Even if we did, sanctuary cities and sanctuary states are now protecting them, refusing to work with ICE. Meanwhile, there's little to no enforcement of E-Verify. Being able to work leaves illegals with zero motivation to come forward, have their claim evaluated, and risk being shipped home. And yes, I'm using the word illegal instead of undocumented worker. Deal with it. We also have a rule that any woman coming to the United States and having a baby while she's here with or without an asylum claim just gave birth to an American citizen. The likelihood that she would be sent home later separated from her child who's now allowed to stay is next to nothing. When the president tries to get Congress to change our stupid, moronic, idiotic rules, the Democrats refuse for two reasons. One, they do not want Trump to have a victory on anything related to border security, something he campaigned on that could get him reelected in 2020. Two, since many of these same Democrats are getting laws passed that do not allow polls to ask for voter ID, they see illegals as a bunch of new future voters. Now, these same Democrats expressed grave concern about foreign entities interfering with our elections, at least while the Trump-Russia narrative was alive. And the GOP is not much help either, since they cater to big business that likes the cheap labor of illegals who cannot ask for minimum wage, although that will soon change too with our sanctuary cities. Meanwhile, the president tries to use the discretion granted to him under the Immigration Act to say that sanctuary cannot be claimed unless one comes through a point of entry. The courts overturn him. Next, Trump tries to declare a national emergency. That, too, is now in the courts. Why even have a commander-in-chief anymore? Why not just let the judges be our commander-in-chief? Trump had also tried to overturn DACA, partly because those who support DACA are also calling for the families of the so-called Dreamers to stay as well. Where's the cutoff point? At which time is a relative too distant? Do we have to include Aunt Bertha? Do we have to include Uncle Fred? Well, no number's given. To even ask such a question means you lack compassion. So Trump overturns DACA with an executive order. The courts overrule him. DACA, incidentally, came about by Obama's executive order. The courts didn't care. One president is allowed an executive order. The next president is not allowed to overturn it. See the consistency? Paying attention? Catching on to how this all works? Agents who work at the border have told us time and again that this is a national emergency. And I don't care what Nancy Pelosi thinks. I'm going with what the agents at the border are telling us. But between Congress and judges, these same agents have essentially been told to go to hell. ICE members are compared to Nazis for doing their job. And this comparison to the Nazis, very tired rhetoric from the Democrats. Let's finally take this apart when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Check out these terrific customer reviews for Bob Siegel's science fiction novel, Push the Winds Around. Another winner from Mr. Siegel. I've always loved the time travel stories, and this one takes a creative approach. Like H.G. Wells' classic, it delves into morals and metaphysics. And as any good time travel mystery, it leaves you satisfied while raising questions at the same time. Here's another review. Quick, thought-provoking, enjoyable read. And just one more. My kind of book. Adventure, fun, excitement, suspense, time travel, love, and a day at the beach. What's not to like? A great book to lose yourself in. Happy reading. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Notice how quickly liberals compare the enforcement of our immigration laws to the Nazi Holocaust. A brain-challenged comparison. Inasmuch as Jews were legal German citizens, rounded up not for the purpose of sending them out of the country, but rather extermination. And yet how many of these very same liberals denounce Israel and take the side of the Palestinians who will not even recognize Israel's right to exist? These same Palestinians also put Hamas in power, which calls for the extermination of Israel. And the president of the Palestinians, President Abbas, is a Holocaust denier. That doesn't concern them, but our government enforcing our border, that concerns them. And such concern was articulated by that latest rock star, Beto O'Rourke. Sorry to have to talk about him twice in one show. Beto says he plans to run a positive campaign. Here are his moving words. This is going to be a positive campaign that seeks to bring out the very best from every single one of us, that seeks to unite a very divided country. Then he goes on and compares Trump to the Third Reich. I guess that's his definition of being positive and uniting the country. The half of the country that supports Trump is supporting another edition of Hitler and the Nazis. This from the man who won't speak out against late-term abortion infanticide. He seems to forget that euthanasia was one of the first practices done by the real honest-to-goodness Nazis under Hitler. By the way, if that sounds like a negative comment from me about Beto, I didn't promise to be positive. You'll pardon me if infanticide causes some negative reactions and an urgency to call out evil. My comment about Beto's so-called positive campaign is merely to show his hypocrisy and fact-challenge assumptions that a president who talks about border security is somehow likened to the Third Reich, especially when this same president supports Israel and speaks against late-term abortion. And this president is somebody who is as opposite of Nazi ideology as one can possibly be. Trump supports the sovereignty of a Jewish homeland. Trump is against late-term abortion and infanticide. Beto is not for either of those things, and yet Trump is Hitler. What has happened to our country? Has it thrown its brains out the window? Has it thrown its moral compass out the window? Both, apparently. Yes, we sure live in interesting times, from government shutdowns over border security to the Kavanaugh hearings to the recently concluded Mueller investigation. It is no understatement to say America seems more divided than ever. In times like these, it's common to hear calls for unity and moderation. Ironically, it has become next to impossible for moderate politicians. As the left moves leftward, its ever-morphing demands continue to redefine moderation. Just ask Republican Senator Susan Collins. Collins recently demonstrated her current moderation by joining 9 other GOP senators in a resolution. Those senators broke ranks, rebuking President Trump's executive order declaring our border situation a national emergency. Nevertheless, her political future seems up in the air, even amongst those who once admired her for being somewhat middle of the road. Collins' situation was well described earlier this year by Roll Call. They wrote, "The Maine Republican's great strength over the years has been her moderation and thoughtfulness. She mulls over issues extensively, almost always looking for middle ground. She supports abortion rights and LGBT issues, and she has broken with her party on topics ranging from the environment to taxes to the Affordable Care Act. But Collins' vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court gives Democrats an opportunity to retire her next year as does the fact that her contest could determine which party controls the Senate. Are you catching the significance of this commentary? Collins' credibility as a moderate is under fire because she stood for the fact that a man is innocent until proven guilty, a standard most Democrat senators participating in the same confirmation process did not share. But it goes beyond Kavanaugh. Something much more subtle and significant is going on here. Notice how this piece in Roll Call describes the positive credentials of being moderate with some very liberal examples, or at least examples of things that were once viewed as liberal, such as abortion rights. Supposedly such positions are not on the left, but are instead examples of thoughtfulness. If Collins came down on the other side, she would be viewed as a conservative, a right-wing wacko. It's as if the left is no longer the opposite of the right. Instead, the opposite of the right is considered mainstream. These days, conventional water cooler wisdom keys in on the word moderate as if such a term somehow embodies sacredness and hope for all sensible people. Yes, doing things in moderation always sounds good. Compromise may be a mark of maturity. When children are learning to share their toys, or adults are deciding which movie to rent or who to invite for Thanksgiving dinner or what to serve, nobody should be stubbornly insisting that a group always does things his or her way. But with broader social issues, cooperating with an opposite position is a little trickier. Indeed, depending on the subject or proposed law, compromise may be simply impossible. For those who seek to impress important standards with any degree of consistency, it's impossible. Getting back to the abortion issue for a moment, if you believe abortion is the taking of human life, how do you moderate that position? It does not mix with the notion that abortion is not the taking of a human life. Should abolitionists have been more moderate in their desire to see slavery end? Should they have worked with Southern Democrats in a bipartisan fashion? What would they have come up with? Some kind of new law that gives slaves extra benefits without actually granting them their freedom? I would also ask those who believe in a happy middle to define far right, inasmuch as the left's definition of far right is ever changing. Most liberals, when they think of the far right, imagine some kind of fascist teaching, and yet it is the liberal who wants the government to control virtually every sector of our lives. That's part of the definition of fascism. These days, those who believe in less government are viewed as dangerous extreme fanatics, but by that definition, our forefathers were every bit as out of the mainstream. Why? Because they wrote a constitution calling for substantially limited government, a constitution against fascism. But let's not go so far back in history. 20 years ago, who could have believed the day would come when those who want to protect our own borders would be viewed as extreme wackos or bigoted racists? Other countries believe in protecting their borders, even countries that chastise Americans for caring about theirs. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Jesus said that his people should be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Some churches take that mandate seriously, others sadly do not. I am happy to announce that there are many good, serious churches in San Diego, and Skyline is certainly one of them. Outreaches to the community and the world at large are carried on by our missionary family. Their ministries to the poor, the shut-ins, and the emotionally scarred. There are groups and classes for all ages, from children to middle school to high school, college, young adult, and senior citizen. Skyline is also on the cutting edge of today's social issues. We mobilize people and help them to be a better voice for the changing culture around us.
Skyline Church, Sunday morning services, 9 a.m. and 11 a.m.
certainly sounds good today to call yourself a moderate. The people I know who call themselves moderates, they're very proud of themselves. They wear it like a badge of honor. But it's becoming extinct. You see, as the left moves further left, our real genuine center, by comparison, looks farther right. Those embarrassed by such a designation, feeling continual obligation to embrace the left's position of what is too far right, leave the former center for the newer center, discovering that the only way to stay evenly between an anchored location and the flowing left is to crawl a few spaces leftward themselves. One might ask where liberals obtain their authority to issue classifications such as extreme right without referring to themselves as extreme left. After all, if we hold to their definition, centrists are no longer centrists. They are instead people who pat themselves on the back for being moderate, all the while failing to watch the undertow. They themselves are traveling unawares. Gradual and unnoticed as the change in the landscape may be, we should stop for a moment and look how far down the beach we drifted. Chances are our towels and umbrellas are nowhere in sight. On to other news, I'm glad to see Jeanine Pirro back on the air after a two-week hiatus, although she has been conspicuously quiet about the run-in she had with Fox News. Ironic how quickly Fox News was able to condemn Jeanine Pirro's comment about Ilhan Omar, a comment which simply asked if the congresswoman was committed to Sharia law over our Constitution. Pretty swift action from Fox, action standing in stark contrast to the Democratic-run House and its impotent inability to call out Representative Omar by name for her anti-Semitism, which, interestingly enough, inspired Pirro's question. Fox is supposed to be an alternative to the mainstream media. How sad to see them tremble and throw one of their own under the bus in the face of threatening advertisers, especially when we think of who they are defending. The ISIS sympathizer Omar is the reason Jeanine Pirro was rebuked by Fox. Pirro gets silenced, and this racist, ignorant twit gets to keep popping off at the mouth. While Pirro raised legitimate questions about Sharia law compared to our Constitution, Omar's anti-Semitism was the trigger which invoked deeper discussion. These have been the big news topics. Meanwhile, the more we learn about this woman, the more we should be concerned, especially since she sits in the U.S. House of Representatives. A lesser known issue is that Omar asked that sentences against men who openly admitted they were attempting to join ISIS, Americans attempting to join ISIS, she asked that they be treated with leniency. That's her word, that we try to empathize with them, because they've been marginalized. But my conservative friends, it is time to take back the language and challenge the conventional talking points of the left. One example would be certain headlines about Jeanine Pirro from a few weeks ago. The headline said Fox News yanked her off the air because of quote-unquote Islamophobic comments. I am so sick and tired of that word Islamophobic. The left adds these phobic endings to any subject in which they can offer no objective debate or rebuttal. It is an attempt to shut people up and neutralize free speech. Be that as it may, I will articulate some objective commentary anyway. First of all, one can be critical of Islam and still embrace the truth that there are peaceful Muslims. Those are not mutually exclusive ideas. And then there is, without a doubt, widespread anti-Semitism in many Muslim countries, communities, and individuals. In England, some schools have chosen not to teach on the Holocaust out of fear that it would offend Muslim students who are Holocaust deniers. In fact, it was an anti-Semitic remark from Congresswoman Omar, which prompted Judge Jeanine to ask her very sensible question about Sharia law. Now, while some Muslims will say that Sharia law is a private lifestyle, the truth is the Quran and Hadiths define this law as something political, something which conquers. That kind of Sharia law, as Pirro said, is antithetical to our Constitution. While we must never turn down an application toward U.S. citizenship on the basis of religion, we do have a right to ask questions about political conviction, especially if such conviction does not square with our Constitution. I would say the same thing about a communist. Communists do not believe in the freedoms and rights of our Constitution, and it makes no sense when they use the First Amendment to call for a revolution that would overthrow the very same First Amendment which is temporarily protecting them. In that same vein, the kind of Sharia law that is both political and religious can certainly be questioned. Before I go on, please spare me the drivel about Christians also being political. It is not a legitimate analogy. I am not saying Christians, Muslims, or any religious organization cannot speak out about politics or get involved with politics. I am saying that at a minimum, we must demand allegiance to our Constitution. Whether or not Omar falls into this category remains to be seen, but it was a fair question. Not the kind of inquiry that merited the bumping of Piro's show and the inappropriate, cowardly rebuke from so-called fair and balanced Fox News. What is especially ironic is that all this began with a failed attempt on the part of the Democratic Party to rebuke an anti-Semitic comment, a process that resulted in little more than a rebuke of Islamophobia. Finally, since we have come full circle with that word, let me suggest that the true Islamophobes are the people afraid to criticize Islam, not the ones who speak up with courage, challenging the tide of the times and or, depending on where they live, even putting their own lives in danger. More news. President Trump told the Russians to get out of Venezuela. Really? Well, there's more evidence then of what the Democrats and mainstream media have been trying to sell us, that Putin is pulling Trump's strings. That's a good example of Putin pulling Trump's strings, isn't it? The president telling Putin to get out of Venezuela. Actually, the Mueller report exonerated Trump, but don't hold your breath waiting for Democrats to let it go. Democrats on the Judiciary Committee in a likely private strategic meeting regarding a subpoena of the entire Mueller report, free of redactions for legal and national security reasons. Boy, I would have loved to have been a fly on that wall. I think I would have heard something like this. Of course they won't give it to us. They can't legally. That's exactly why we're asking for it. This creates our new narrative that they have something to hide. Yes, the debris from the Obama administration lives on. And not just with those deep state people in Washington. We'll tell you how else it lives on when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. I've been on the radio for many years, but let me tell you about a voice I've learned to appreciate far more than any radio announcers, Fred Falduti of Realty Executives All Area. Now, why do I care so much about Fred's voice? Because not long ago, Fred's voice spoke the following words to me.
Bob, I have some good news for you. They accepted your offer.
That's right. Fred Falduti just sold my house. With words like those, who needs radio? Folks, I'm telling you, choosing the right realtor is no small task. Fred took a personal interest in my situation, treating me less like a customer and more like a member of the family. And Fred's been doing this since 1994. Realty Executives All Area has sold thousands of homes locally.
Our footprints are throughout San Diego County, and we are proud of our accomplishments of assisting home sellers and buyers like you. Over the years, we've managed hundreds of real estate transactions and have encountered just about every kind of challenging situation possible.
That's it, folks. That's the voice that will sell your home. Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com. We radio hosts love to talk, but let's face it, when have we ever sold your home? Fred Falduti will.
Bob Siegel not only writes fiction, but nonfiction as well. Over the years, Bob has received wonderful comments about his book on Christian apologetics entitled, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... Many have put this book in the hands of their seeking, unbelieving friends, and the book takes it from there. This is because the book has a rhetorical skeptic that argues with Bob about the harder, less frequently discussed questions. As a result, the reader is immediately aware that they are reading from an author who relates to them. The moment they find themselves questioning something they see, their very question appears in the text. Every question in this book was one that was personally put to Bob during his many years of speaking on college campuses. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Former Attorney General Eric Holder, in response to the Trump slogan, Make America Great Again, says, when was America ever great? Well, Mr. Holder, why don't you tell us which country is greater, and please let us know when you plan to move. But getting back to your original question, America was pretty great for you. A land where you became Attorney General of the United States, that was quite a bit of power bestowed upon you, although I will be the first to admit that for the rest of us, you being in that position was not so great. Speaking of the office, Holder has also been critical of our new Attorney General Barr, unsatisfied with the way he is summarizing the Mueller investigation. This from the guy who was responsible for Fast and Furious. This from the first Attorney General ever to be held in contempt for Congress. This from the man who shortly after most voting Americans, right after most voting Americans elected the first black president, said, our country needs to have a conversation about race. Those are the words of a race baiter who will never be satisfied with the progress our country has made. Of course, even for those of us who did not vote for Obama, we refrained for policy reasons, those same reasons explaining why some of us got behind Ben Carson for president in the last primary. And so, Mr. Holder, allow me to ask a question of my own. When was America not so great? When you disgraced the office of Attorney General. Actually, President Trump doesn't need enemies like Democrat Eric Holder, not with friends like Republican Karl Rove and former President George W. Bush. The genius Karl Rove says that Trump should quit talking about the Mueller investigation and move on. Sure. Let's stop talking about an attempt on the part of our intelligence agencies and Justice Department to exonerate a guilty candidate and frame a sitting president. Let's not have any investigations of the investigators. Let's continue that predictable, tired drivel about how the American people want to move on. The American people want to just move on. Yeah? Is Comey moving on? Is Schiff moving on? You can't turn on the TV without seeing their mugs and listening to their blather. Tell you what, Rove, why don't you gather all the helpful rhinos together? Now that's a sight that should truly move on. Former President George W. Bush used to have a personal policy about moving on. He had been known for years as a man of class who felt that a former president should never comment on a sitting president. God knows there was plenty for him to say about Obama, but standards are standards, right? So he refrained as far as Obama was concerned. Why then did he offer a veiled reference to Trump by calling upon Washington to tone down the rhetoric regarding immigration? What could he possibly have felt needed to be toned down if not the designation of our border crisis as a national emergency? In any event, he has actually commented on Trump directly in the past while interviewed by an author for a book called The Last Republicans. Bush openly admitted that he did not vote for Trump in 2016, and while that does not necessarily mean he voted for Hillary, refusing to vote for the GOP nomination does help the Democratic candidate. So much for concern about the future of our country, Supreme Court nominations. His comment was shared even before the book's publication date. I would call that open criticism. And so his standard apparently applies to Democrat presidents, but not a president in his own party. Has he just not gotten over the fact that Brother Jeb was supposed to win the GOP primary, that Trump broke the rules by winning instead, that Jeb was as entitled on the GOP side as Hillary was entitled on the Democrat side? But you don't have to be a politician to feel entitled or to be granted a special privilege. Charges against Jussie Smollett have been dropped, even though the prosecutors themselves were convinced, publicly stating as much, convinced that his accusation of two Trump supporters beating him up was false, they still let him off. I'm surprised they didn't award him the Nobel Peace Prize and a lifetime supply of Slurpees from 7-Eleven. Now, what makes them think they could get away with this? Perhaps the current political climate? After all, Jussie hated Donald Trump, so lies notwithstanding, can't be all bad. Besides, even if Trump supporters were not the guilty party this particular time, they are still guilty in general, right? Of course, right. What great news for our country. Lady Justice isn't blind anymore. Apparently, she sees quite clearly. While we're on the subject of Jussie, on February 22nd, I posted the following on Facebook. You can go to my Facebook page and still read it. Here it is in its entirety. I'm reading it in the exact words. I wrote on February 22nd, mark my words, when this whole Jussie Smollett thing is over, the media will still find a way to blame Trump. Should they prove Smollett a liar, we will hear that he had his reasons for bringing attention to racism due to the toxic atmosphere created by Trump. We'll also hear about what a horrible childhood he had, how his mother never bought him a sled, and how the last few years of Donald Trump triggered so many other horrible memories. Yes, those were my words. Now, while some of the stuff at the end was obviously satirical, the part about the sled, the core sentiment of hearing some kind of psychoanalysis was something I did expect. The early part about Trump and his toxic atmosphere was not satire. For that portion, I anticipated a virtually literal fulfillment. Now, let me read to you the recent words of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, himself disgusted with Smollett's lies and the fact that he got off. Now, while technically the Democrat mayor is not part of the media, look how chillingly similar his words were to my prediction. These are the words of Mayor Emanuel. Let me be clear about something. The only reason Jussie Smollett thought he could take advantage of a hoax about a hate crime is because of the environment, the toxic environment that Donald Trump created. Now, folks, add to this the fact that the Hollywood Reporter tried to explain Jussie's actions by talking about the pressure of Hollywood fame, and I would say my prediction was spot on. Unfortunately, I cannot truly boast, given the times we live in, a trained chimpanzee could have made the same prediction. Likewise, given the times we live in, I would prefer a trained chimpanzee to most of our public figures. Well, if you would like to weigh in on any of this, you can reach me at Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. Regarding last week's show and the three women who joined Dana to talk about healing and forgiveness regarding abortion, Elaine says, well done, all of you, praying for all of you, including the women who will be attending your retreat. Regarding our show, our repeat broadcast from 2 weeks ago featuring two women who ministered to Mormons, Fran says that was awesome. Such brave and anointed women. I have a Christian friend, a nurse who provides in-home care for a Mormon family. I'm going to share this with her. She is inundated with their influence and she needs to listen to this show. Thanks. Well, this show that everybody needs to listen to will be back next week.
Bob Siegel Show, sponsored by Bob Siegel.